Chizue panted heavily as she marched through the woods. The old woman had lost track of how long she'd been walking. Her bones cried out for relief, but she couldn't stop. She knew the destination was worth it. Finally, the trees parted before her, revealing a pool of crystal-clear water sparkling in the sunlight. The water flowed from a spring on the side of the mountain, just as her husband told her. Groaning, she sat down and removed her sandals. Her wrinkled feet were cut and scabbed from this strenuous trip. She rarely left the house, much less hiked this deep into the woods. She scooted forward and dipped them into the cool water. Chizue stared in wonder as the wrinkles on her feet vanished before her eyes. She withdrew her feet from the pond to find the feet of a 20-year-old woman on the ends of her withered old legs. Her eyes flashed greedily, and on these young feet, she ran toward the mouth of the spring, shedding her clothing as she went. When she reached the very deepest part of the pool, the old woman whooped with joy and dove headfirst into the magical water. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales. This week, we're going to tell you the story of the Fountain of Youth, a tale of discovery and unexpected horror set in the wilderness of ancient Japan. The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. While the Fountain of Youth may seem like a story of wonder at first, the original tale contains a disturbing twist about the price of greed. Please exercise caution for children under 13. If you want to hear more tales, you can find all of Parcast's podcasts wherever you listen to podcasts. Many of you have asked how to help the show. If you enjoy Tales, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review online. The Fountain of Youth is a myth that many of us in the Western world are familiar with, but perhaps not in this form. Legends of a spring that restores youth to anyone who drinks from it have been around since the 5th century BC. The first references to such a fountain are in writings of the Greek historian Herodotus, who wrote of a fountain that gave exceptional longevity to an ancient African tribe called the Macrobians. The most popular version of the myth in Western culture is an apocryphal tale about 16th century conquistador and governor of Puerto Rico, Juan Ponce de León. The legend states that Ponce de León was determined to find the land of Bimini, which was said to be the resting place of the Fountain of Youth. According to these stories, Ponce de León searched the Bahamas, the Florida Keys, and the Gulf Coast, but to no avail. Obviously, a real Fountain of Youth was never discovered, but it's easy to see why its existence was such a universally enticing notion. As we grow older, all of us wonder what it would be like to reclaim youth without losing the wisdom we've gained over the years. Unlike the aforementioned legends, this tale is entirely self-contained, and most definitely a work of folklore with no basis in actual Japanese history. The oldest known version of this tale appears prominently in an 1898 book of Japanese fairy tales by the nomadic writer Lafcadio Hearn. It's a smaller and more intimate tale than the overblown European legends concerning a modest woodcutter and his wife who make an unexpected discovery. Toshiro awoke before dawn that morning. He did not know why, but a persistent itch on his knee would not let him go back to sleep. His hands were shaking, and his throat felt dry. He realized with frustration that he would never get used to the discomforts of old age. He could just barely make out his wife, Chizue, in the pre-dawn light. She lay beside him, eyes closed. If he looked at her long enough, he could see the beautiful young woman he married all those years ago beneath the wrinkles and folds of old age. A few moments later, he sat up. Chizue rolled over and mumbled,
"What is the matter, husband?"
"It's nothing, dearest," Toshiro said. "Go back to sleep."
Toshiro rolled out of bed and walked over to the door of their small house. He slid it open a crack and looked out onto the surrounding forest. A low mist hung over the trees and slopes around their isolated home. As always, they were surrounded by nothing but natural beauty. Toshiro had cut wood for a living all his life, but he didn't know how much longer he could do it. With every swing of the axe, he could feel his arms growing weaker, but he had to support his Chizue. She could not support them both with her weaving alone. He did not keep secrets from his wife often, but he could not bring himself to tell her what had happened when he visited Kurifumura, their local village, to sell his branches. When he arrived, he had been greeted by a group of youths who grinned fiendishly at the old man, walking with a sack of lumber over his back. The first of them, a skinny young man with spiky black hair, called out to his friends,
"Look, the woodcutter from the mountain! I thought he died years ago."
Never one to miss a good joke, one of his friends responded in a voice meant to be overheard,
"You're probably right. This man looks like a corpse."
Toshiro may have been a poor man who lived far away from the village, but he was still a man who valued his pride above all else, so he did not mention this interaction to Chizue upon his return. Toshiro was shaken out of his reverie by the first light of dawn breaking over the horizon. Although he had barely gotten any sleep, he was wide awake. He heard the bed rustle as Chizue stirred and began to rise. Chizue made them a modest breakfast of natto over rice. Toshiro was never particularly fond of the pungent soybean dish, but Chizue insisted that eating strong foods helped keep them young. She did not remark on how Toshiro always guzzled his tea afterward to get rid of the sour taste. Toshiro picked up his axe and his sungungasa. Before he put on the straw hat, he kissed his wife and promised that he'd be home before sundown. It was an exchange they had every morning of their married life together, and one they would probably have until one of them died. He could feel her eyes on the back of his head as he slipped his shoes on and walked out into the forest. Sweat ran down Toshiro's back as he hiked up the mountain slopes. He was not the type of woodcutter who just hacked away at the nearest cypress he could find. Today, he was searching for quality rather than quantity. He knew that deep within this forest, there must be an ancient red pine that he could fell. That would fetch a much better price than the feeble trees that grew closer to his backyard. Before midday, Toshiro had completely emptied his water skin, and his throat was as dry as a summer in Okayama. He began to fear that the heat would sap all his strength before he started cutting any wood. And then he stepped past the tree line into a small clearing. Toshiro was speechless. Almost as if he had wished it into existence, a modest pond of clear spring water spread out before him. He dropped his tools on the grass beside him and knelt to drink. He gasped as his hands broke the surface of the water. It was quite cold, but nowhere near cold enough to deter a man with his thirst. He cupped his hands and lifted them to his lips. He felt a slight tingle as the liquid washed down his throat. Although he could not taste any difference, he felt his thirst vanish, as well as his sore throat. Toshiro splashed his face and ran the water through his hair. He was refreshed and ready to resume his search for lumber. And then he stopped. Someone, was looking back at him from the water. A young man of no more than 25 years, a matching sungungasa on his head. Were his eyes playing tricks on him? Removing the hat, he bent closer to the reflective surface
and scrutinized the figure. It was no trick of the light, and there was no young man lying on the floor of the pool. Cautiously, he reached his hands up to his withered old face and watched as the young man mirrored him. Where there was once a face lined with wrinkles, he could only feel smooth skin. He ran his hands through his hair to find that it was the thick black hair he'd known as a youth, not the thinning gray mane he had grown accustomed to. He whooped with joy and tore off his tunic to splash his torso with the water. He splashed himself twice, careful not to get carried away, and watched in wonder as the wrinkles washed off him like a thin layer of dirt from a hard day's work. His sagging flesh hardened into the muscles he had as a young man. "Was I really so good-looking?" Toshiro thought to himself as he examined himself in the pool. "This must be some trick." Fear briefly gripped his heart as he wondered whether this was a trap conjured by some Dokkabi to make him waste a whole day of work. He cast a wary glance around him, but saw no such demon. And when he stood up, he knew that the energy in his limbs was no trick. He felt like he could climb to the top of Mount Fuji without breaking a sweat if he wanted to. Toshiro redressed and gathered his supplies. He needed to tell Chizue of this miracle fountain. They would have an opportunity few dare to dream of, the chance to enjoy young love again, with the wisdom of their old years. He ran at full speed back toward his home. After years of living impoverished lives on the mountainside, it seemed that, at long last, some hope had entered their lives. But hope can be a fragile emotion. We'll return to our story in just a moment from the Parcast Network. And now let's continue the story. Toshiro had been running for a whole 15 minutes when he stopped himself, breathing heavily. His elation at being young again had almost made him forget that he had to find his way back to that magical spring. He took the axe and carefully marked each tree as he went toward his house. He knew if he followed the trail due west, following the afternoon sun, he would make it back to his home in a few hours. While walking, he marveled at the thing he had missed most about being young. It was never the straight posture, the carefree years ahead of him, or even the sensual experience of being a young man. In truth, it was something far simpler. It was just easier to walk briskly. Just when he suspected he had lost his way, he spied a familiar shape through the trees. His home. He peered into his own backyard with fresh eyes. He could now see all the problems that he could fix with his newfound strength. For starters, their fence and roof had been in dire need of repair for years. He couldn't wait to surprise his wife. This was the best gift he could ever have given her, a chance to have a husband who had the energy to support her. But just as he stepped out of the woods, something struck the tree beside him, sending splinters showering by his face. He ducked just as another rock sailed over his head and dove behind the rickety fence, clutching his axe with both hands.
"I see you, bandit!"
It was Chizue, yelling from the corner of their house.
"You thought you could rob us while my husband was away, hey?"
Another rock struck against the fence. Chizue may have been an old woman, but when protecting her home, she was as fierce as a dragon.
"Chizue, stop, it's me!"
Toshiro called from behind the fence. He peeked out to see his wife frozen in place, another stone raised over her head, ready to throw. He stepped out so she could get a better look at him.
"It is I, Toshiro, your husband."
Chizue burst out laughing, but her arm remained poised for attack.
"Not only a bandit, but a prankster as well. My husband is more than twice your age, and he'll be off cutting wood until sundown. You cannot fool me."
Toshiro lowered his sungengasa and looked his wife directly in the eyes.
It is no trick, Chizue, my love.
He recounted the events of that day to his incredulous wife. He watched as her expression changed from one of disbelief to amazement, and then to joy.
I can't believe it, Chizue cried. A miracle!
Toshiro demonstrated to Chizue just how strong and revived he felt, running around their house and performing acrobatics he had not seriously attempted in decades. She was delighted, but there was something else behind her eyes. When her husband finally stopped his theatrics, he said exactly what she wanted to hear.
You must drink from the fountain as well, so we may be young together.
Toshiro's eyes gleamed as he looked down at his wife, who looked old enough to be his grandmother. Chizue raised a finger to his lips.
You stay here and guard the house. Tell me where this fountain is, and I will go to it myself. I wish to surprise you the way you surprised me.
Her eyes glinted suggestively, and Toshiro was powerless against the look. In his mind, he could already see the gorgeous young woman he had fallen in love with coming back through the forest to greet him, and he shivered in anticipation. He told her where to find the spring and how he had marked the path with notched trees. Without a second's hesitation, Chizue turned and hobbled off into the woods, not looking over her shoulder once. Toshiro watched her go, a lover's smile on his lips. His next couple of hours would be spent preparing for Chizue's return and the anticipated erotic adventures afterward. He would never have suspected that while he was fantasizing about a youthful reunion, the day would turn from fantasy to tragedy. Our story will continue in a moment after a brief message. And now, let's continue our story. For hours, Toshiro fantasized about what he could do with his newfound youth. Maybe he'd go down to Kurifumura and find those youths who mocked him. They wouldn't dare tease him now that he could fight back. But what would his excuse be? That he is Toshiro's long-lost nephew, come to care for his elderly uncle? The couple lived far enough from the village, it just might work. They were not popular or infamous enough for people to pay close attention to their family lives, after all. Toshiro dismissed the idea. He would cross that bridge when he got there. But under no circumstances would he tell the people at the village about the fountain. This was a blessing for Toshiro and Chizue alone. Toshiro waited and waited. As the sun dipped closer to the horizon, he grew anxious. She could not have gotten lost. The spring was deep in the forest, but the path was clearly marked. And even moving at the pace of an old woman, she would have found her way there by now. At sunset, he decided he could not wait any longer. He considered briefly that his newfound youth had brought with it the impatience of a young man, but he brushed that thought aside and left the house. He set off into the woods, following the path he left for himself up the mountainside. In the dull gloom of dusk, the trees looked far more sinister than they had during the day. The scratches he had left on the sides of the trees began to resemble leering faces, taunting him at his foolishness. Every one of them seemed to hiss at him.
You should not have let Chizue go alone, foolish man.
He half expected to find his elderly wife face down somewhere, having passed out from the effort or from exposure, but he found nothing along the entire route. He picked up the pace, not wanting to lose the trail in the darkness. Somehow it was still light enough to see when he arrived at the magical spring. He realized, with a flash of pride, that his young eyes adjusted to low light far better than he remembered. He called out for his wife and was greeted by silence. The pool was as still as when he saw it earlier in the day, a gentle ripple flowing outwards from the mouth of the spring. The rising moonlight gave it an eerie glow that cast dancing patterns of faint blue light around the clearing. Toshiro slowly began to make his way around the pond, eyes peeled for a young woman. He found no one. With a heavy heart, he came to the conclusion that his wife had lost her way in the woods and was somewhere among the trees, desperately searching for a landmark. He was just turning to leave when something caught his foot. He looked down. It was a pair of geta, wooden sandals, just like his wife was wearing when she left the house. He stiffened. Goosebumps traveled up and down his spine when he heard the noise. He crept over to a crop of tall grass near the water's edge and peered over. Amongst the grass lay a baby of no more than 6 months old. Toshiro wanted more than anything to believe that he was imagining this, but his young eyes didn't lie. He was seeing his Chizue restored to youth. For a moment, he considered flinging himself into the fountain to join his wife as an infant, but he balked a moment later. What if he retained his consciousness as an old man? Could he willingly doom himself to starvation while trapped in a baby's body? Chizue stopped crying and looked up at Toshiro. The baby had an expression Toshiro had never seen on an infant before. It looked regretful. A broken Toshiro bent over and scooped up his infant wife. He stumbled back to their cottage, eyes glazed over with shock. He did not know what to do. His life had taken a turn for the unimaginable. It was all he could do to sing softly to the baby that had once been his wife. Believed to be several thousand years old, the origin of this particular tale has been lost to history. Its first written incarnation predates Lafcadio Hearn's collection, Japanese Fairy Tales, by only 3 years. In a chapter of his book, Out of the East, entitled The Dream of a Summer Day, Hearn describes stopping at a rocky pool of water on his way back to his home in Kumamoto, when the story he'd heard of the Fountain of Youth suddenly resurfaced from the back of his mind. He wrote, quote, "Unexpectedly, a queer recollection came to me, resurrected perhaps by the sight of the young man with the baby, perhaps by the song of the water in the cliff, the recollection of a story," end quote. He then proceeds to write out the tale in full, exactly how it would later appear in Japanese fairy tales. Lafcadio Hearn was 48 years old when his fairy tale collection was published. The journalist spent much of his life traveling all over the world, from his birthplace in Greece to Ireland to the United States, until finally settling down on the Japanese coast, where he spent the rest of his life. Perhaps what fascinated Hearn about this particular story is how it puts a unique spin on a legend that was already well known around the world. While most stories about the Fountain of Youth depict it as a treasure to be discovered for glory, this tale is darker, showing the fountain as a force of nature, unpredictable, inexplicable, and dangerous if taken for granted. Thanks for listening to Tales. If you want to listen to more episodes of Tales or Parcast podcasts, you can find them all on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, CastBox, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast directory. Some listeners have been asking how to help the show. Well, if you enjoy the show, the best way to do that is to leave a 5-star review. Join me in 2 weeks for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Ron Shapiro, with production assistance by Paul Mahler.
Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. Tales is written by Robert Teamstra. I'm Vanessa Richardson.